and the poetic and you know that it's important. We are starting to be worried because procedurally you cannot wait 10 minutes beyond your starting time. So, but on that note, I think as leaders, and particularly there's this thing that leaders are delayed somewhere. Maybe you will get your prior engagement, but I just felt that as a chairperson that we should raise that, because 5 minutes or 7 minutes, it means a lot to this committee, especially that as members of the committee and the nature of the institution, around 12:30, other members will be supposed to go and attend to other committee engagement. On that note, everybody is welcome, and I'm just going to request that we introduce ourselves so that immediately after the introduction, I'll head over to the leader of the delegation to take us through the presentation, the stretch plan. Thank you, honorable members. Let me just start with myself without waste of time. I'm Wendy Makate from the Northwest International Person Select Committee.
Good morning, everybody. Busisiwe Mncube, representing Gauteng. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Lydia Mshodi. I'm coming from the Western Province.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Michael De Villiers, and I'm the representative from the Western Cape.
Good morning, Mohsen Zulu from KwaZulu-Natal.
Chairperson, and on behalf of our delegation, let me pass our apology for delaying the meeting. There were just a few matters which we needed to tidy up to make sure that we give you a complete picture of our presentation here. So sorry for our delay to keep you waiting. My name is Joe Pada, Deputy Minister for the Department of Art and Culture, and I have with me here the DG for the department, Mr. Sposiso Kaba. And I don't know whether he'll introduce the delegation or they should introduce themselves. Thanks. We are accompanied by Ms. Vanessa Pantuza, who is the Chief Operations Officer in the department. And at the back on the left, Mr. Michaelin is the Acting Chief Financial Officer. Next to him, Dr. Sakiwo Tiso is the Head of Monitoring and Evaluation, as well as Governance. And next to him, Ms. Masia Bukhanedi is our legal advisor, the Minister's legal advisor. Thanks, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Jazz G from PMG.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Lori Crowley, BP from DG's office.
Good morning, members. My name is Itabi Sibawa. I'm the assistant to the committee secretary. Thank you.
Zuyanda Langa, secretary to the committee.
Honorable member, can you just introduce yourself?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Willem Farber, and I represent the Northern Cape Province.
Honourable members, we've got three apologies One apology is from the Minister of Arts and Culture, Honorable Paul Mashatile. We've got another apology for Honorable Masha Maite from Limpopo. Honorable Hassan also from the Northwest. Without any waste of time, Honorable Deputy Minister, I'm just going to hand over straight to the chairman to give us a presentation.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members, Honorable members. We did receive a letter of invitation to this meeting, the letter did state that the committee wanted the department to brief it on the strategic plan and the budget for the current financial year 2011 and 2012. So without any further waste of time, Honorable Chair, I'm going to ask our DG, Mr. Kaba, to lead us through the presentation, and then from then onwards, later on, we'll all help him in any further discussions on the presentation. Thanks, Chair. What I'm going to try and do quickly is to go through the presentation outlined as follows: the purpose of the presentation, our vision as a department, our key programs, key priorities and needs, our campaigns, a brief look at an emerging strategy around Mzansi's golden economy, some of the highlights of the department and some of the challenges that we are facing. Speak very briefly about our organogram, as well as finally our budget, our MTF budget. I really would like to brief the SCAS committee on our program and strategy for the year 2011-12. And the vision of the department is to develop and preserve South Africa's culture and to ensure social cohesion and nation building. And our programs, as a department, we've got 6 program objectives. The first one, obviously, is corporate services, which provides overall management and centralized support services to the department's core programs, ensuring that we create an enabling environment for the achievement of the objectives of the department. The second program is Arts and Culture and Society, which promotes arts and culture in South Africa and mainstreams its role in social development. The third program deals with the National Language Services, which develops and promotes the use of official languages and enhances linguistic diversity. Program 4 is Culture and Development, Cultural Development and International Relations, which aims to improve the economic and other development opportunities for South Africa's arts and culture, nationally as well as globally, through mutually beneficial partnerships, thereby ensuring sustainability of the sector. The fifth program is Heritage Promotion, which develops and monitors the implementation of policy and legislation and strategic programs for the identification, conservation, and promotion of cultural heritage for socio-economic development and social cohesion. And finally, National Archives and the Library Service, which guide, sustain, and develop the archival and library and information resources of South Africa so that good governance is supported, socio-economic development is sustained, and citizens are empowered through full and open access to these resources. Chair, perhaps to start off with locating ourselves in the outcomes which Cabinet approved last year, the 12 outcomes. And the Minister of Arts and Culture has signed a performance agreement with the President of the Republic and comprises of the following outcomes. We contribute to improved quality of education. That is led by the Department of Basic Education. However, we contribute towards that. Decent employment through inclusive growth which is led by the Department of Economic Development. However, we've got contributions to make there, as well as vibrant, equitable and sustainable rural communities and with food security. We also contribute towards that. However, we co-lead the 12th outcome, which is an efficient, effective and development-oriented public service, which is the part of the outcome which is led by the Department of Public Service and Administration, and an empowered, fair and inclusive citizenship, which is led by the Department of Arts and Culture. We normally refer to that as outcome 12B. Now, what do we contribute to the various outcomes? On outcome 12, on output 5, we contribute two things. One is campaigns to inform and educate citizens about the rights and responsibilities in terms of the South African Constitution. Secondly, we contribute the celebration of South Africa's cultural diversity. On output 6, which is citizen participation, we provide access to information, mainly through our libraries as well as the archives, public awareness about participation through the various campaigns that we have as a department, as well as institutional design to maximize participation. And on social cohesion, we contribute towards social capital and the use of art and culture as a way, as means of building social capital. On outcome 7, which is rural development, we contribute access to information once again to mainly the library as well as archives, as well as an innovative service delivery model for rural areas. And mainly we do that through our programs as well as the program on investment in culture. On output 4, on improved employment opportunities and economic livelihoods, we contribute towards the enterprise development services supported, including SMEs and cooperatives, and that we do mainly through our capital budget as well as the community art centers. On outcome 5, we contribute towards improving support to small businesses and cooperatives, and reducing constraint and improved support to small businesses. And most of the contribution which we make there is through our investment and culture program, which is a grant funding program for culture programs employment creation potential. On the expansion of EPWP, we contribute mainly through our capital works program, the construction of new infrastructure, as well as the upgrading the upgrading and maintenance of our infrastructure. Now, some of our key priorities, Chair, is social cohesion and nation building, and we'll get to a bit of detail on these. Skills development, economic development, development, preservation and promotion of arts, culture and heritage, as well as preservation of access to information. Starting with the first priority of social cohesion and nation building, the geographic name changes. We, together with the South African Geographic Names Council, we are responsible to continue with the process of standardizing geographical names, as well as to engage citizens in the issues of geographic names. Jay, you would, it's a bit of a difficult area of work, in the sense that it will always be contested terrain. And part of our responsibility is to ensure that due processes are followed in the processes of geographic name change, and obviously the minister becomes the final authority in the changes of names. In fact, we have a workshop starting tomorrow, between tomorrow and Friday, which will be hosted in collaboration with the provinces to consolidate the recommendations of the hearings. We had a process of hearings in the provinces on geographic name changes processes that have been taking place. Now, we want to consolidate that so that we've got an agreed process, the processes which are understood, not just in terms of the acts, the geographic names acts, but also in terms of the promotion of the Administrative Justice Act, which prescribes how participation should take place and so on and so forth. On national days, we encourage the participation across all nationally celebrated days in South Africa as part of promoting South Africa's cultural diversity, as well as to commemorate our history. And, there is an issue, Chair, around how do we encourage the celebration of national days across the various sectors of our society, across race, across class. And part of what we are doing here, because this is an important area of nation building and identifying ourselves as a nation. Part of what we are doing in this regard is that most of our national days are no longer celebrated just as a day. It's normally linked to a month. For instance, June is, the national day obviously is June 16, which is Youth Day, but June is the June month. And there are several activities that take place that actually begin to target different people. We will speak about some of that towards the end of the presentation, what we are doing during the Youth Month. But that is how we want to get more and more South Africans involved in the participation of national days. Also part of what we do is that national days, while they must be a national event, most national days are also celebrated in other provinces. So people have a wider opportunity of participating in the national days, not just in wherever the national event may be held. Festivals, we promote the arts, culture and heritage through various festivals. Makufe is probably one of the biggest of these cultural festivals. Mapungube, which is in Limpopo, and so on and so forth. Part of what we're doing, as we'll see here later on, is that we're trying to get nationally supported festivals in each of the provinces. South Africa's cultural diversity sometimes is geographically located in various places, and it's important that that is promoted where it happens. However, festivals also provide a substantial means of the growth of local economies, because people actually travel to various festivals. Makufe, towards the end of August, September, people know that there's Makufe, and everybody sort of treks around to Mangaung for the celebration of that, and it has a positive impact on the local economy. We're promoting these festivals together with South African Tourism Authority, South African Tourism as part of promoting local tourism. We have a number of conferences which we hold, National Oral History. There's a conference coming up this year on that, the Summits on Social Cohesion and Nation Building, as well as National Conference on Carnivals, together with the Carnival Movement in the country. And we've got interventions that promote dialogue. We recall, Chair, that earlier this year the President spoke about the need to have a national dialogue on social cohesion and nation building. And we have a process in the provinces currently of community dialogues about social cohesion, about our values, about what are the things that make us South Africans. In fact, we have named that particular campaign South African at Heart, because it promotes being South African as the uniting factor over and above the things that might distinguish one from another, things like race and gender and sexual orientation and so on and so forth. The Trendsetter Initiative, which is a training program for young people based mainly in our community art centers, is in Mizos, which provide a platform for exchange of information as well as to get feedback between the government and communities. The community art centers and performing arts institutions, including our playhouses, which serve as a vehicle for social cohesion and nation building. At the same time, they provide short-term jobs, mainly in the community art centers, but long-term jobs in the performing arts institutions, in technical, hospitality, and security services.
On skills development, we are working on a national skills academy in the arts, culture and heritage. We want to consolidate the building of skills in the sector chair, and want to develop the academy as a center of excellence, providing a platform for artists to perfect their skills and thus become best in the world. Part of what the National Skills Academy seeks to achieve is, one, take people from basic education in the sector to actually making them competitive globally, so that arts and culture becomes an export commodity. South Africa, particularly in music, has been known to produce very well-known, well-renowned artists, and we want to package that and provide more platform for particularly young people to reach those levels, and this contributes towards the new growth path. Special skills, specifically in areas of writing and creativity for publishing, to get more people to be writing books in different languages as well. Script to Screen, which is a training program in the film industry, training from people who are script writers to producers and so on and so forth, prioritizing indigenous storytelling and writing, especially in rural areas and townships. Human a resource development strategy to promote skills in the heritage sector, both from a heritage promotion as well as the protection of heritage. We've got a advisory program focusing particularly on in the languages profession. Chair, we'll speak a little bit about that later on. We're also partnering with the industry to support skills development and transfer into ports in response to extended public works program in mentorship and curatorship and similar. The National Film and Video Foundation has trained 142 scriptwriters, editors and producers. That's the script to screen program. And we also have international cooperation with the International Design Indaba, which gets young creatives across the various sectors to showcase their work, to network, as well as to build their skills in design. On economic development, the new growth path has provided what I think is a unique opportunity for the sector, in the sense that the creative industry is identified for the first time as a growth sector in the economy. And the Minister of Economic Development spoke quite a bit about that in his budget speech. And the Minister of Culture also spoke about it in his budget speech last week. And supports creative industries by developing strategies that aim to address interventions in the creative industry value chain for job creation. And through a number of things, Medium and Moshito, which are music-related, FESPACO and Cannes, as well as the Devon International Film Festival. And really, there are a variety of things which we're trying to do here. One is that we're building the skills of the different subsectors in the creative industries, but also showcasing what South Africa can do in the international platforms, so that we're able to attract more investment into the country, and we're able to get more economic development activities happening in these sectors. We also support industries which are critical in contributing towards job creation, which are film, craft, design, performing art, book and publishing, as well as technical services. And we've got projects like the Tutuga Jewelry Training, for training apprentices, Fashion Fusion, which focuses on rural development and investment in culture projects to support job creation. We also promote and strengthen South Africa's arts and culture participation through bilateral, multilateral, as well as trilateral treaties including IBSA, the BRICS, the Rock Art Project, which is a project of rock art, which was developed by the SAN communities, which is focusing on South Africa, Botswana, as well as Namibia. This year we are hosting an Indian season in South Africa. In fact, starting at the end of June, we're going to have artists from India which are going to be touring the country and showcasing Indian art and culture. With the reciprocal visit of South African artists in India next year, we've got similar arrangements with France for the coming 2 years. And we also contribute on economic development through uplifting SMMEs through our own procurement as a department. On the development and preservation and promotion of arts, culture and heritage, the National Heritage Board, which was launched last year, some of the routes and places have been identified. There is an ongoing process led by the National Heritage Council of identifying further places which contributed towards national liberation in South Africa, in the country as well as in the SADC, and this is supported by the SADC and the AU. On intangible capital cultural heritage, there's an audit on intangible cultural heritage which is being conducted with the aim of indicating the location and the status of intangible cultural heritage, and also to develop a register and prevent the preservation of intangible cultural heritage. On access to information and the preservation thereof, the National Archives will continue to support and guide records and information management procedures across government. You would recall, Chair, that this is a program that we run not just for the department but for the whole of government on how records and archives are to be kept, and give guidance in that regard. We also build a sustainable archive preservation program for the National Archives and the Film and Video Archives to support the National Digitization Strategy. On libraries, we support the establishment of community libraries. This year we've got 14 which are going to be built from scratch, as well as an upgrade of existing ones, 75, this year through the conditional grant which is transferred to provinces. And we also include the establishment of 6 service points for the visually impaired readers. On indigenous language, the promotion of indigenous languages, the translation and editing of documents into, as well as from all official languages, as well as some foreign languages. I mean, this is an issue, you'd recall, Chair, that there is a court case. There was a court case on this particular matter, which is why the department is going to be introducing the South African language bill in order to comply with the constitution, which requires that we should regulate the use of official languages. Part of what we are doing in this regard, obviously, is to help also provinces to do this. I know that some provinces, at least one province, the Western Cape, already has a provincial language policy, but all of the others are in the process of developing these policies about which languages are official in different provinces and how how the translation of different documents is going to be promoted. The digitization policy, which provides for national guidelines on issues of digitization of heritage resources and the use of digitization to improve access to our heritage resources. Just to speak briefly, Chair, about Mzansi's golden economy, which is really the strategy of how arts and, the arts and culture and heritage sector contributes to the new growth path. We had a consultative conference in April this year with the sector as a whole on what steps government should be taking to expand the contribution of the sector in economic development as well as in job creation. And the conference affirmed the sector as a key ingredient for social stability and economic growth, really balancing the economic agenda as well as the social and nation-building agenda. And there are key strategic programs which were proposed and agreed to excuse me, one is Education and the Skills Academy, which I've spoken a bit about. Secondly is the establishment of a sourcing enterprise that is going to put artists and the markets in one place, so that it's easy for people to access different art forms that are available in South Africa and help artists to access markets. Cultural precincts and events in every province, so that we've got a fairer distribution of cultural precincts as well as events. When we speak about the budget and how our budget is distributed geographically, you'll be able to see the importance of this web chain. Information centers so that people have access to information across the country on the sector. A touring venture which is going to develop different productions and tour them across the country so that people have, I mean, we develop a culture of attending productions. Heritage Legacy Project, I've spoken a lot about that. The public art program, which is about beautification in various areas, using young artists as a way of promoting their skills. The art bank, which is going to curate art in different public buildings, and make different art, the work of different artists available to government markets, as well as cultural observatory, which is going to help generate data. One of the things that we discovered at the conference is that the economic contribution of the sector, data there is not very easily accessible. If you look at the standard industry classification, which is used by Statista, there is no sector called creative industries or art and culture. It's normally accounted for together with tourism or other industrial classifications. So we're creating this cultural observatory so that we're able to have up-to-date data on how the sector is performing, and therefore which helps us to plan better. Some of the key activities in this financial year is that we have established project teams for each of the interventions that I've spoken to. The project teams are developing detailed proposals for how this can be rolled out, the business plan for each of these interventions, as well as how they are going to be funded. We want to use this as part of our budgeting for next year, but also as a way of accessing different pots of funding which are available to the sector, whether that is through the IDC or that is through the Jobs Fund or that is through other funding which is available in government. Some of our key campaigns this year: the 30th anniversary of the Matola raid in Mozambique. We are building currently a monument as well as an interpretation center in Mozambique of the Matola raid. The groundbreaking for that is going to be in July of this year, and the project should be completed before the end of this year. In fact, by November, which is when the 30th anniversary of the Matola raid is going to take place. The 35th anniversary of the Soweto uprising, that work is being led primarily by the National Youth Development Agency, but we are supporting some of the work relating to our sector. We facilitate intergenerational dialogues between young people as well as the older generations as part of building human heritage. The Cultural Diplomacy Conference, which really looks at how do we develop culture and strengthen culture as part of our international diplomacy program. Part of the considerations that we would like conference to talk about is the creation of cultural attachés across the different South African missions internationally, so that we're able to market culture as a national asset internationally. The African Women's Writers Symposium, the National Book Week, which was launched last year, and we are continuing with it this year. The Samora Machel anniversary, I think this year is the 25th anniversary of the death of President Machel. It also coincides with the National Year of Samora Machel in Mozambique. number of activities that are happening. We are working with the government of Mozambique towards the commemoration. And obviously, we've got a statue in New Zealand, Mpumalanga, which is the site of the plane crash. And there is work which is continuing of developing that particular site together with the government of Mozambique as well as the Mashel family. Community mobilization campaigns which would culminate into on a national summit on social cohesion. Some of our highlights over the last year, we received an unqualified audit report last year. Obviously this year we are now we've just started our audit now at the beginning of June, and we're quite hopeful that we'll also receive another unqualified audit, hopefully a clean audit. We launched our anti-fraud and corruption prevention campaign in December 2010. The annual Chief Albert Luthuli Memorial Lecture, the Third World Festival of Black Arts and Culture, which was in Senegal, and we met together with our colleagues in Senegal towards that. The launch of Magnificent Friday in collaboration with the Ministry of Sports and Recreation. Some of our challenges here. We have a rather high vacancy rate in the department currently. But I think it's important that we contextualize this. It's a high vacancy rate which we want to fill, but there is also a challenge of an insufficient budget to fill our vacancy rate. Currently, we are sitting at about 44% vacancy, and we do not have a sufficient budget to fill all of our vacancies. However, we are going to be filling all our funded vacancies this year, and we'll keep our vacancy rate below, our funded vacancy rate below 10%. Part of what we're going to be doing in this regard, Chair, is really review our structure, because we would love to have a structure which is feasible, given our budget. We are in a process of aligning our strategy, our budget, and our structure as a department so that we've got something which we can reasonably fund. Obviously, we will be speaking to Treasury about increasing some of our budget so that we're able to deliver all the things that we're committed to delivering on. This is the high-level structure, curriculum of the department, the ministry, the deputy minister's office, the office of the DG, and the five branches, corporate services, arts, culture and economic empowerment, heritage promotion, arts and culture and society, as well as national archives, languages, and the library services. Chair, get onto our budget. Our budget for this year is 2.4 billion rands, of which, it grows by about 300 million over the MTEF to 2.7 million rands. Of our budget this year, 178 million goes into our administration. The performing arts, which includes the NAC as well as our playhouses, 549 million. The National Language Services, 101 million rands. Cultural development, 180 million. The heritage promotion, which includes some of our heritage institutions, particularly museums, 763, and the National Archives and the National Library Services, 694 million. That is really how our budget is spread across the different programs in the department. Continuing with the budget, our economic classification. Our budget, 164 million, goes towards the compensation of employees, which is less than it's less than 5% of the budget of the department. 228 million goes towards goods and services, conditional grants, and this is for the libraries, which goes to provinces and municipalities. It's 543. Agencies and accounts, that's 861. On capital works, 455 million. non-profit organizations, 12 million rands, households, which is the money that the department sort of distributes towards, different communities, mainly, through a range of programs, 196 million rands, and capital assets, 6 million rands. And Chair, I think this kind of augurs well in the sense that most of our money is money which is spent outside the department, it's money that is distributed. Obviously, one does need to say that our agencies and institutions also use some of this money for their own operations. But generally, they are guided by 25%. 25% of their budget should go towards their OPEX. The rest goes towards distribution and goes to directly to the sector and to households. Just looking at how our budget is growing, this year we've got a very modest growth of 1.1%, grows by 6.3% next year, and in the outer year by 6%. There are certain cuts which National Treasury has imposed on us, and really this affects primarily our goods and services budget, some of the heritage projects, as well as the National Arts Council. Looking at where we spend our money, 16% of our money is spent within the department. The rest is transferred outside the department, whether to provinces, but most of them of that goes to our institutions. Really, this is just a graphic presentation of what I've already spoken about, the split between the different economic classifications. Let me not repeat that. But looking at our ring-fence funds that we really do not have any discretion towards, investing in culture, which is money that gets transferred to different projects, 119 million. The community libraries grant, 543 million rands. The National Library Service, 7 million. PANSAL, the Pan African Languages Board, 56 million rand. Social Cohesion, 21 million. Capital Works, 455 million rand. That's money that is mainly used for capital infrastructure as well as the maintenance of our various infrastructure, the different heritage institutions, as well as the different museums. And the bursaries for heritage, 1.5 million rands, and the NFVF, an additional allocation for the NFVF, which is 33 million rands. And in the different institutions, how is our money split? The NAC, the National Arts Council, gets 68 million rands this year. The National Film and Video Foundation gets 74 million. Our arts institutions, which are the different playhouses, 184 million, and we look at how that is distributed in the different playhouses. PANSAL gets 56 million. The National Heritage Council, 47 million. The declared cultural institutions, mainly museums, 323 million, and the Geographic Names Council, 7 million. SARA, the Heritage Resources Agency, 38 million, and the National Library Service, 74 million. And so what we did is we took the highest of these, which are the arts institutions as well as the cultural institutions, and we look at how this money is distributed to the different institutions. On arts institutions, Artscape gets 42 million rands. Business Arts SA gets 6 million rands. The Market Theatre gets 23 million. PACOFS, which is in the Free State, 31 million rands. The Playhouse Company in Durban gets 36 million rands. State Theatre in Tshwane gets 37 million rands. And Mindy Brow, which is in Hillbrow, gets 8 million rands. And the different cultural institutions, the African Dal Museum, 4 million rands. The Anna Lindbergh House Arts Collection, 246,000 rands. Freedom Park, 58 million rand. Izigo, 53. Literary Museum, 6 million. The Natal Museum, 40 million. The National Museum, 30 million. Nelson Mandela Museum, 16 million. Robben Island, 54 million. The National English Literary Museum, 7 million. Fort Drake Museum, 9 million. The War Museum of the Boer Republic, 6 million rand. The William Humphreys Art Gallery, 4 million rand. And the Zong Museum, 54 million rand. And that makes up the 320 million, which goes to cultural institutions. Chair, we did a bit of a look at how our budget is spent amongst the different provinces. And Gauteng gets a bigger slice of our budget, which is 40% of our budget, followed by the Western Cape, together with the Eastern Cape, followed by the Free State, followed by KZN, the Free State, the Northern Cape, Limpopo, and eventually Mpumalanga. Chair, let me just quickly say that this slide is not completely accurate in the sense that a lot of our national institutions, like the Film and Video Foundation, the National Arts Council, and a whole range of others, are budgeted for under Gauteng, simply because their offices are in Gauteng. But that money gets spent throughout the country. So in that sense, this slide is a bit there. Gauteng doesn't necessarily benefit from 40% of our budget, but that money just happens to be the city there because that's where the head offices of those institutions are. Chair, would like the committee to note our priorities and our program for this year, as well as some of our highlights and challenges. And thank you, Chair.
I allow members to there is some way we talk to you, talk about but we have to use this as a program, but we didn't elaborate why.
Chair, I'm going to ask Mike to help with that.
Yeah.
But
there were certain cuts affected, as Lydia had highlighted. These cuts were affected by Treasury. It was on goods and services. I will give you the exact amount now. It was also on the NAC, an amount of 1.9. The goods and services was 5.3 million rand. Then the National Arts Council was 1.977 million rand. And then our households, specifically our heritage institutions, okay, not our institution, but the heritage household, that meaning the project funding, was cut to an amount of 8.5 million rand, and cumulatively is 15.779 million rand. But also, we have to keep in mind that we had a last tranche payment for capital for Freedom Park of 134 million rand. That's why that increase is so slight, because that was the last tranche for the capital part that went over to them.
Honourable members, Honourable Father, let me start from you because you were the first to be Honourable Father, Honourable Virginia, Honourable Shadi, and Honourable Members. Honourable members, I'm going to repeat that if left us, firstly, you know, members should treat 4 persons. And we'll have the second round to allow the department to
to note down the questions and so that you can be in a position to monitor whether they've answered to all questions that have been raised by members. Honorable Baba.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, DG, for the presentation. My first one is not a question, it's a demand. You know, as politicians, we demand things. Now, DG, I demand that I'm representing the Northern Cape.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
That 7% for the Northern Cape is not acceptable. As Limpopo's 5% is not acceptable. And I'm being serious of this. You know, it's just sometimes that the big provinces keep preference. If we have to look at the areas, surrounding areas, or the Oppervlaktes in Afrikaanse, then that piece of Gauteng will be in the Northern Cape, because we're the biggest, vastest area in the whole country. We've got culture, we've got the biggest history in this country, in Kimberley, which is where the gold mines and everything, money from Gauteng came from, because of the diamonds in the Northern Cape. So we can have a long discussion on this, but what I'm saying to you, sir, is that 7% is not acceptable. To me. So that is just an input from my side, the demand. Thank you, sir. Then if we go to questions, the declaration on cultural museums, and then we're talking about the amount spent. I see that some museums get 30 million and 40 million and others get 3 million and 6 million. Who actually decides on, you know, how much is going to which museums? Is it depending on the size? I don't know. If you can just perhaps help me on that. Then there was a funny name, Pan Salt. I have no idea what that is. If you could perhaps enlighten us with that abbreviation, I would like also to know, as I'm sitting on this committee, what that abbreviation stands for. And yes, and then the Rock Art Project. Because I'm from the Northern Cape, we spoke about the Sun people. Last year I told everyone that Saki Bartman was from the Eastern Cape. They talk about the Sun people. And I clearly stated that when we talk about the Bushman people, they're from the Northern Cape and from the old Namibia, Botswana area. They're not from Saki Bartman. That's a total another piece of cake. So I just feel that the Kung and Kwe and these Bushman people are left behind. And I don't see that there are actually things being done for these people. So I see that you've got things in here of language. I've raised it with the Department of Education as well, where these children, which don't speak Afrikaans or English, but they go to the Afrikaans school, which was developed for them, which is very difficult if your mother tongue is Kung and Kwe, which I don't understand. For these poor kids to have to be taught in Afrikaans, it's already a backlog. These kids need to be on the languages, perhaps. We must see if we can help them as well. I know they are busy with a dictionary, etc. I don't know if you are, or if you know about that, but you know, or getting their language written down in a type of a dictionary. But I would like to know, what are you doing for this indigenous tribe? As I say, it is also a fact that they were the first people in Africa, the Bushman people. So I mean, I'm fighting for the Bushman people because I do feel that they are left behind. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. My first question to the department is in connection with the National Film and Video Foundation, the 142 script writers, the training of them. I just want to find out with the department, how is there a program or plan to follow these people after they are trained, so that we can see if they stay there or just go into their training and then go look for the future in somewhere else. That's the first question, Mr. Chairperson. The second one about the post. I understand that the department do have some financial problems about funding the post and paying for the people or the staff in the employed them. Now my question is, in connection with that, is the recruitment plan from the department, and also how many posts will they, or how many posts they already advertised, and when will those posts be filled? Then the third question, Honourable Chairperson, is about the arts and culture skills development in schools. And I understand that basic education, you have the obligation to do that, but I just want to find out with the department what are their responsibilities and also how they connect with basic education, so that we can also extend our skills just from the basic of the foundation of education, because when people are actually adults, then it's very difficult to develop those skills. It's rather best to start from the beginning. And my first question, Honourable Chairperson, is in connection with the Community Library Services Conditional Grant. How will the department monitor that? What criteria the criteria they used to distribute those funds? I will follow up with our question. Thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. My first question will be on page 2. On the issue of language services. I just want to check with the department, is the Department of Arts and Culture going to promote the sign language and motivate for it to be the third official language in the Constitution? Again, Chairperson, my second question will be on the page number 3. Page 3 on the issue of social cohesion and nation building. How does the department intend to promote social cohesion and nation building when the majority of other races still boycott events such as Freedom Day celebration? Another question, my third question, Chair, is on page 4 on the issue of bursaries. I just want to check with the department, how is the department going to monitor the candidates to ensure that there's a value for money in that program? And another question, the last question, Chairperson, is on page number 5, on the issue of libraries. Can the department give us a breakdown by provinces? Where are these libraries going to be established and upgraded? As we know that a National Council of Provinces were representing the provinces here. Thanks, Chairperson. It's only 4 questions that I have.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, for your attention. Let me start with the addition on the challenges on the vacancy, high vacancy rate. The last time we met, almost all the senior positions were acting. And we're even joking that it's Hollywood. And currently you are at 26.8%. vacancy rate, and you are raising the question of the challenges linked to that. Mm-hmm. However, you are raising a challenge and a commitment that you intend filling, or you will strive filling this 16.8 by the end of the financial year. And my question will be, you put a challenge and a positive thing. Where are you going to get this money? And then it should be linked to the question of how the advertisement and the nonsense that Honourable Faba has raised. The other one is on the mobilization campaigns that culminate into the National Summit on Social Cohesion. I'm from Gauteng, and I'm deployed at an area where there is coloureds and Africans. And there also, within that constituency, there is a heritage site, the Kingdom. But when we voted on race and not on social cohesion. What one wants to find out from yourselves, how far would you roll out these campaigns? How do we help as members of parliament in ensuring that where we are, we do these things so that you achieve this intended campaign? Getting to the other one is on the recording. I'm not sure. I know that last year we talked about it. The recording of the oral history. To say, in your budget, where does it fall? Where does it fall? Social cohesion or heritage or whatever, where does it fall? Because we are, for instance, we are losing our legends, our icons. It has been in your program. How far is that process? So that we don't, you see, when you relate a story to another person, you get to lose some of the information. So I want to find out whether it's still budgeted for and where is the progress. And let me start with this one. On the National Day, I'm not sure how many questions I'm for. Okay, I'll come back. Let me start with that one, because if I leave it, I'll be wrong. We have been vocal in lobbying the Treasury to allocate funding to provinces according to the equitable share funding formula. And my province will always tell me that I want you to raise that because Gauteng has 10.5 million people, which goes back to when a lot of money goes to Gauteng. It's about how many people are there. And we talk of the census that is, we may have 11 million now. So in talking for my province, we need more than what we have allocated. I'll come back. Thank you.
Before I give the floor, I just want to see the question was asked around, you know, the issue of your social question and nation. One is interested, I'm going to raise this question to the minister. I raised it last year and I'm still going to raise it. If we are serious about disability, why do we allow the department, if I have to give a practical example, in the North, where we import this to the 3 months, which are budgeted by the very same department which we are talking about nation building? You have your cultural festival, which is predominantly Gauteng and is catered for by the department. Every year, after two weeks, we start with this one, which is for blacks. 2 weeks after that, we have the other one, which is called AFLOP. Yearly itself is purchased off, and it's for whites. Are we serious as the department to build nation? Because to me, we are still, you know, we are encouraging that. why can't we budget for one instead of having two activities which are budgeted by one department? The other issue is around the issue of levels, like other members have raised. We are aware that this community levels are built or are responsibility of the provinces, because these are built through the conditional fund. But the question comes now around the issue of monitoring. Are we sure that as the department we get need for the money? Because most of these libraries, they are community libraries, but are not accessible. You go to a village, the community library is there and the village is there. It comes back to us, and you know, around the issue of do we have monitoring mechanisms, or how do provinces report, and how do we ensure as national department that really we achieve what we want to achieve. Gigi, on your presentation, there's no way where one gets, like the previous DG indicated, that 9 provincial coordinators were, is it suspended or dismissed? One is more interested at what cost? At what cost? And what is the position now around the issue of the provincial coordinators? Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the honourable members for those questions. I will take some of them, and I'll ask my colleagues to engage with others. Starting with the geographic spread, the spread of our budget, I would agree that it's the 7% for the Northern Cape is probably not enough. However, there are two things here. One is that, once again, that number is not necessarily accurate, because the National Arts Council spends some of its money in the Northern Cape. The National Film and the Video Foundation, with their projects, they're located in different provinces. That money goes there. The same goes for the Heritage Council and so on and so forth. So, that slide is a bit misleading to that extent. But also, there will always be the question of how the budget gets spread. I mean, what is the criteria? And the FFC uses the criteria, which is a combination of two things. One is the population distribution in the different areas, as well as the area of the province. However, the area of the province is normally used for operational expenses. This is the funding of projects, so it's got to be guided by the distribution of the population. But Chair, I'm not sure if we'll ever reach a situation where we're all happy about the distribution. For me, the important thing is that we've got an objective criteria that does not show bias of one area over the other. Perhaps a big part of that is the urban and the rural spread of our money. Increasingly, we're trying to get as much of our money to go also towards rural areas. Hence, the issue of the community art centers, the investment in culture, as well as the program which I mentioned earlier on. I did say earlier on that part of the groups, if you look at the slides on Zanzibar's golden economy, we are trying to get every province to have a cultural precinct, which is going to help the spread of resources across all the provinces, as well as to have events in those provinces, so that we are able to generate activities I have and spread them across the various provinces. I'll leave the question of the deciding on the funding of museums to the agency. PANSAL is the Pan-African National, Pan-South African National Languages Board, which is a structure which is created to promote the use of various languages, including in indigenous languages. In fact, it's interesting that the issue of the San people is raised, because the Deputy Minister was raising exactly the same point earlier on when in our discussion that we do need to have a focused intervention on indigenous and First communities, particularly the San communities. Currently, the Rock Art program is we are running it in the different countries between South Africa and Namibia. Mainly, it's being run through the expertise at events. The extent to which we have engaged with directly with the San people and the development of those communities, I'm not confident that we have been able to do it. I cannot say an equivocal thing here. Perhaps some of my colleagues might help with that as well. But it is an area that we need to address. The training of scriptwriters, as I understand it, the NFVF does follow up with the people watching the scriptwriters to ensure that they remain in the industry and they actually use these increasingly. In fact, some of the scriptwriters, some of the products of this training some of them have produced adverts, some of them have been producing different documentaries. And if you look at the numbers of people that are producing movies and documentaries and so on and so forth, that is good, and part of that is the success of this program. The posts that have been advertised, I'll leave that to Ms. Padusa to respond to. Safe to say, Chair, that we have most of our top management positions have been advertised. There are difficulties with filling some of them because, there are two DDG positions which we cannot fill because a senior manager who is on suspension in the department has applied for those two positions and has actually lodged a grievance that his suspension was excluded from the filling of those positions. So until that particular matter is resolved, we cannot fill that position. Which also touches on the difficulty of the disciplinary processes that have happened, because it freezes positions, because until people are completely out of the system, you cannot fill those positions. Work doesn't get done, yet you are paying for it. So it's part of what we need to do is to balance all of these things and ensure that the department continues to deliver what we need to be delivering, despite all of these difficulties. Arts and culture in school and how we connect with the Department of Basic Education. There is a program through which the department funds arts teachers for mainly, I think it's primary schools. The way the program is done, we fund the salaries of these teachers. The Department of Basic Education would place them in various schools. Currently, our funding does not allow us to have an arts teacher in every school. So the schools are actually clustered. You would have an arts teacher in the different subsectors of arts, which actually visits the different schools and actually train the children in various areas. It's an important area of our work, which is going to become part of the skills academy, because not only does it generate and identify new talent, but also even people that don't have a talent in the arts necessarily, but because people have an interest in the arts, those people become future audiences. research has shown that people who are exposed at a young age to the arts are likely to follow the arts when they are adults. But people who don't have that exposure are unlikely, because they said they were never interested in the arts from the, I mean, sports has actually shown that quite clearly as well. The several questions around how we monitor the community libraries. Two, there are two things which we do. One is that, in terms of the Division of Revenue Act, provinces that receive condition of grants are required to report. They report on what they have done with the grants, they report on how much they've spent, and so on and so forth. But also what we do, as part of our MINMEC structure, the technical, the meeting between the DG and the heads of departments, they are required to report on how much they have spent on the grant, but also the usage of those community libraries. And we are seeing some interesting programs. I think it's in KwaZulu-Natal, where the department is doing some very positive thinking getting young people into libraries. There's some statistics, unfortunately, I don't have it here, which was shared by the provinces, of the usage of the libraries. Some of the libraries, increasingly young people, are attracted into libraries by availability of computers, availability of the internet. So there are different ways in which libraries are being used. Obviously, that is not even across the different provinces. Some provinces are leading in this regard, particularly KwaZulu-Natal and Western Cape, I think it was. But we're trying to get those learnings to be spread across the different provinces so that they can be emulated where they can work. The issue of boycotting national days, I think there are a number of things which we need to do in this regard. In fact, colleagues from the Eastern Cape were saying to us, part of what they have tried to do is to take some of the national day celebrations to areas where, I mean, outside the traditional areas where we have those, because most of the time we have these things in stadiums, in the townships. And obviously the people that will come are people that are around those areas. In fact, they were saying that they took them to some of the traditionally non-black areas. And they have seen a turnaround. More and more people are beginning to attend these things. But I think it's not just a race thing. It's also a class thing. Even the black movie class does not attend this. So part of what we're trying to do is to make them attractive to different people through things like different lecture series I know during the Freedom Month, during April, there were a variety of lecture series which actually began to attract people that probably would not have just gone to a national day on their own, but to get people involved in them in different ways so that we increase the popularity of the national days and how different people attend those. There is a breakdown which I have of the condition of grants on community libraries. For this financial year, and I'm sorry, Chair, that it's not able to the slide, but for this financial year, the Eastern Cape gets 80 million rands. The First State gets 47 million rands. Gauteng gets 54 million rands. KwaZulu-Natal gets 45 million rands. Limpopo gets 66 million rands. Mpumalanga 66 million rands. The Northern Cape gets 69 million rands. Northwest 62 million rands. And Western Cape 48 million rands. This is also affected also by past expenditure. Unfortunately, in government, if you don't spend money, you lose future money. You don't just use the money that you're not able to spend. You lose future money as well. So it's also affected by that. But also it's affected by, if we were to show a slide, which I don't think we've got here, but if we were to show the slide of what the different provinces themselves are spending on libraries. And there's a very close correlation between the national budget and what the provinces themselves, because that shows that there's an interest and provinces are investing their own money in the libraries. I've touched about how we fill the vacancies and how we're going to try and fund them. Safe to say that we've got a bit of work to do in trimming our own structure and making sure that we've got something which is feasible. But also we are going to be approaching National Treasury with very solid proposals about how things are just not going to work unless we've got additional budget for personnel. Part of what I mean, we met earlier this year to look at some of our support services. So I think we've got, what is it, less than 5 people in IT supporting a department of 441 people. It's just not going to work. I mean, it doesn't matter how you look at it. You cannot support that. The National Archives, which runs a complicated IT system, and the Cape Town office, it cannot possibly work. And we've got to get additional funding for that. And to the extent that we are even willing to ask National Treasury to change some of our goods and services budget into personnel budget so that we are able to get more people and actually have internal capacity to do the things that we need. But it's an engagement that we will do with National Treasury. The community dialogues. The community dialogues have been happening in the different provinces. What we, the department, did is we asked provincial departments to help us to identify areas and identify dates where they would love to have these community dialogues. In fact, the community dialogues program was launched in May. It was launched in Park Station, and that's where some of the community dialogues have been taking place. But the location of the dialogues were provided by the different provinces. Once again, something very interesting changed. We were able to provide funding for a certain number of dialogues. Some provinces actually said this is a good program. Out of their own money, they're going to provide funding so that they've got more dialogues. So once again, that collaboration between ourselves and provincial departments has become very useful. Maybe let me just speak quickly about the dismissal of the provincial coordinators for the investment in culture program. The provincial coordinators were dismissed after a disciplinary process. In fact, as we sit here, they have approached the bargaining council, and the matter is before arbitration. We are likely to get an arbitration award before the end. I mean, an arbitration decision before the end of this week. I mean, obviously, this is a bit of a bad situation. But as a department, we have had to take the corrective measures that we had to take. The processes have to go their own way. And the view that we are taking is that we would like to reposition the investment of culture program such that it is linked to the rest of the work that we are doing, but also is linked to the provincial departments. I do not believe that it's very wise to have individual people moving around in the provinces without being related in one way or the other through the provincial departments. We are rethinking the investment in culture, the best way of rolling out the program in the department, because it is a useful program. It's a program that has provided useful projects, but we would like to do it in a way that promotes accountability in a way that also promotes the sustainability of those projects themselves.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. I think I just want to add on what the DG has already alluded to. Firstly, with the PANSAP, it's Chapter 1, Section 6.5 of the Constitution, which indicates that the PAN South African Language Board is established by national legislation, and that it must promote and create conditions for the development and use of 5A1, all official languages, 5A2, the Khoi, the Nama, the San languages, and 5A3, the Sign language, and then to promote and ensure respect for all languages commonly used by the communities in South Africa, including German, Greek, Gujarati, Hindi, Portuguese, Tamil, Telugu, and Urdu, and Arabic, Hebrew, Sanskrit, and other languages used for religious purposes in South Africa. So it's got that broad mandate, but also there's an issue around the Pan South African Language Board. Although the funding is channeled through the department, it's not a chapter 9 institution, but it's a constitutional institution. So therefore, through the parliament, the portfolio committee of arts and culture does call upon them to report on how they have then carried out their mandate. So that's I just wanted to add on that, Chair and honourable members around that. But also on the language itself, in terms of the same language, we reported last year to the select committee around what we are doing in promoting indigenous languages in the provinces. And one of the reports I received from the Western Cape was that they have got a program to promote the same language within the Western Cape. I would think that they need to work closely with the Northern Cape as well, Honorable Mr. Bauer. They say that in their report they even have booklets that they've developed on the language. So it's something that the Western Cape in particular has worked on. I think the DG has touched, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, on the recruitment process. For me, it's to say that we have advertised in terms of number of posts. We reported to the Department of Public Service and Administration that we have about 38 odd vacancies that we have advertised. 13 of which are from assistant director upwards, that's like your top management, senior management, and middle management, and 25 of which we advertised through a government bulletin as well as internally, which would be your what they call production posts. But I must say that DG has alluded to challenges that we have, but we have filled the DG position, we have filled the Chief Director Monitoring and Evaluation, we have filled the Director in Internal Audit, we are in the process of filling the CFO position as well as the Chief Director Human Resource Management position. So we're covering some ground, Honourable Chair and Members, around filling of these vacant positions. We're hoping that when we come back, we would have a better response in terms of how much we have filled of the funded vacancies. I think DG is really strong on the issue of let's look at the realistic structure and not talk about this utopia that we wish we would have in terms of the structure. What is realistic in terms of what we have in our funding envelope? I think on the issue of the recording of the oral history, I would like to say that I think this year we have our annual oral history conferences, which is championed by program 6 in our program, which is National Archives, and the outcome of that is documents that documents those deliberations, but also what they do is what they factor in when we do those oral history conferences is to bring in the young children in the schools and empower young children in terms of recording the oral history and going to their families and finding out about their family histories. So that's also another part of that conference that is aimed at ensuring that we build capacity to preserve the oral history. I know that it was for the 7th conference coming up, and we rotated among provinces. The last one was in Mpumalanga. I think those are the areas I wanted to cover today.
Do you the Honourable Chair and members on the question of the allocations to the museums. It's been historically based on the size of the institutions, with a yearly increment received from the national treasury of between 5.5% and 6%. We are going to start looking at a more formalized funding model forthwith, as soon as I get back to my normal job as acting CFO, because I think there needs to be a more scientific funding model. But currently it's incremental based on science.
Thanks, Chair. Just comment on some of the issues. Again on the issue of the vacancies and the organogram, just to say also that maybe it might be good in a way that we have the challenge of the funding, because we do have to review the priorities. Because when we, at some stage with the minister, when we were looking at the structure, the organogram, firstly, within the department itself, there were some areas where we found that certain functions could be streamlined right within the department itself. But also there are certain areas where we still have to revisit some element of duplication with the agencies of the department, so that there's improvements which can be made where some functions which are carried out by agencies of the department, but you find that there's some element of duplication within the structure and functions within the department. So we will definitely be going back, you know, to look at that. Just a comment also on the allocations per province, how we spend our monies. Just to maybe add that I think also the acting CFO, the last point you made about historic allocations, some of the things will be historic in terms of where the monuments are, where certain heritage institutions are. And I was just saying to the team before we came here that, and I'm disappointed that Honorable Mashama Ike is not here, because I was saying that I'm also going to defend Limpopo in this meeting. And I was hoping Honorable Mashama Ike would lead, because when we're looking at the breakdown, there are various things, I mean, not just the overall allocation, but in terms of playhouses and such facilities, theatres. There are some of our provinces which, because of historic reasons, don't have those facilities. But then we continue just to fund those who have, like Gauteng and KZN and Western Cape. But some of the things also, honorable members, is also that our provinces, I mean, I've seen this in the other areas where one has worked, it's also driven by demand, by initiative. If our colleagues in the provinces are not taking initiative, I mean, we're saying that, for instance, we must review the issues. I think one of the members raised the issue of, maybe one from a different point, the chair raised the issue of festivals, of addressing different racial groups and so on. But there's also the anomaly that you find that we fund sometimes quite substantial amounts in festivals in provinces which are already advantaged. I mean, it's a historic basis that we fund quite substantially, the Cape Town International Jazz Festival. And I mean, if we were to compare what we give to the Cape Town and what we give to Limpopo for Mapungubwe, you will find, you know, and even at least something has gone to Limpopo. But if you go to Mpumalanga and go to Northern Cape, you may find that there's actually nothing in that area. So some of the things, I mean, we are open to review, but it will mean, I mean, we're saying internally that we must also help with a more structured policy Because some of those things happened historically, that certain institutions took initiative and applied for assistance. But we are also looking internally to in terms of a policy which says that in terms of festivals, this will be the funding policy. But if the policy is not backed up by initiative from the provinces in terms of some of those activities, then it will remain a policy. But those who are ready, you know, with the budget and request to say this is the activity, they will get the money, despite whatever policy. I think the DG has already mentioned on the sound that I did make the point that it can't be correct that we talk about the rock art in which the sun are the primary originators. And then we've got other people deliberating and on what they are initiating, but we are not bringing them into actually become active. And we're saying that we must indeed try to get involved and to bring the Sun community to be involved. Lastly, Chair, just on the issue which I think Honorable Mtobe raised, which I've also raised with the DG and others, on the social cohesion, that we can't be oblivious of the lessons we're getting from the local government elections. We busy here, we can't sit there theoretically and say we're nation building, social cohesion, and we are oblivious of the fact that there is some sign which suggests that when it comes to practice of political life, our society is drifting into different compartments. And we're saying that some of those is the work of political parties, in terms of whatever, you know, but our duty as a department, we will have to also just enlighten amongst others the political parties to say, when you talk about social cohesion and nation building, granted elections about attracting numbers, but think about nation building, think about social cohesion as you craft your messages, so that you may win the election with whatever messages, but you may be contributing to polarization rather than unity of the population. But also we're saying that we must also do some work in the department, in the government, and check, because I was saying to the DG that I think, even though we don't have the data, even some of the way in which a government functions somehow may be alienating some communities, in the sense that some of them, you get a sense, even on talk shows and so on, that they look at certain activities as that government of these people and not their government. And there may be some unconscious work. And I was saying, for instance, I don't know how many departments, when they have their outreach programs, the ambassadors and so on, make sure that they cover different parts. Our country is still 17 years after democracy, we haven't done away with special distribution of race. If you go to Soweto, you likely deal with African people. If you go to Lenasia, it will be Indians. You go to El Dorado Park, you go to Mitchell's Plain and Kailicha, and so on. So it may be that the major pressure for talking about social services is to go to Kailicha. And there may be just too many activities in Kailicha, and the Mitchell's Plain people may feel that they are not really part of this department or this government for certain activities. And I was saying that among some of the things we must do is just to do some work around those things, so that we can advise political parties, we can advise government in terms of things which we may pick up, which on the one hand we may be singing about, you know, which may explain even why when we talk about Freedom Day or Heritage Day, some people don't relate to it because they think it's not their government, and so on. And you know, it may be messaging, it may be communication, but some of it unconsciously in our actions, we may also be contributing. But we will come back to you during the course of this work to try and see if there is some advice which we can give. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable members, let me just plead with you, honorable members. You know, the cell phones we suffer, particularly from the site, and is disturbing. Please unplate it. Please
Because it's from the side of the members, I must be honest, I'm pleading with members to switch off their cycles. Yes. Honorable Father, is it a follow-up?
Yes.
Is it a follow-up?
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to allow Honorable Father and then Honorable Father.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just going back to the museums on the amounts that's being given to each museum, and maybe the CFO or the acting CFO can help us on this. You know, I'm looking at certain museums, but then I'm asking myself the question, for instance, the McGregor Museum in Kimberley, the Magersfontein Memorial Museums, why aren't those incorporated in these? Those are definitely cultural institutions of the past, which I don't see here. Now, I can't, and I know that they do suffer of finance, I mean, they don't have finances, we know that. Then the other thing I just wanted to make here, like the Gharib Festival in Kimberley, for instance, it's been fully funded by private enterprise, definitely not by the departments. While you get the Diamonds and Dorings Festival, which is also a cultural festival, which is held near Kimberley, which is fully funded by the Silplaik municipality. So I believe some of these festivals do take part, and it may be part of a type of polarization, and I do agree with you. You should get it together at some stage. I don't know how to do that. But that is definitely being instigated by private initiatives. So it is actually not being funded by government, ma'am, like the one in Poch as well. That's also, as far as I understand, by mostly private enterprise that starts it up. I know definitely the Gharib Festival, because I was at Silplaik Municipality, there's no cent that comes from government. It's fully funded by the private enterprise. So yes, that one, just at the end of the day, just compare apples with apples. I just want us to look at that as well.
Thank you, Honourable Fiverr, but I'm just going to challenge you on that. Do you say that it's correct for the private sector to, you know, encourage, you know, this thing of...
Madam Chair, sorry, just a matter of clarity perhaps. I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying, like when Steve Hofmeyer and Dozier and whoever comes there, it's private enterprise and it's open for all. But there's a cultural feeling of, I'm going to say it, whites, that goes to these festivals. But where with the Diamond and Durham Festival, which is fully funded by the Silplaik Municipality, black people goes there. And it's as if the white people, I don't know if they don't feel welcome or what the situation is, but it's like but what I'm saying is a type of polarization which we should sort out. It should not be like that.
We'll take that as politicians,
yes.
Because it says we've got a lot to do.
Yes.
Thanks. I will start with the Mzansi Golden Economy. I raised it in passing, but I need to raise it formally. I saw, what do you call it, your pop-up banners, whether it's correct to call it pop-up banners, and you have your languages there, whatever you've written, the message you have written there. And if you go back and count those languages, there are 10. And in South Africa, our constituents recognized 11. And the one that is not there is the Zulu one. And you continue with this wrong thing. And the department which is entrusted with promoting of our indigenous languages, you dare not make that mistake. And I will request that you correct it, or you don't flip those that incorrect message. The other one is on the religion is part of your task. And I'll raise this thing. Also, what becomes broadcasted, you have a role and Department of Communication. But I'm raising this on a religion part, which falls under yourselves. what, how much more would you come in as the Department of Arts and Culture on a program that is flighted by the media house, for instance, the Soto TV, flighting the program on religion with despicable actions undermining women? We are a non-racist, non-sexist, all those things, but what becomes flighted in that every day, on every Sunday? It undermines women, it undermines our constitution. So I'm raising it with you because religion falls under the department. Whether Soweto TV get funds, has been built by this person, you need to interact. It's been flighted on the national media. It's not only flighted in Soweto. Even if it is flighted on Soweto, we have more than 3 million people residing in Soweto. The other one is on the... I've been exposed in my constituency on trying to call constituency in different focuses. And we've called people that have interest in arts, in craft, in whatever. And we call the department in Gauteng. And what comes out is that this industry, they are unorganized. The individuals here, there. And when you have all these windows, projects, individuals, because they are not skilled in writing business plans, whatever criteria that you have there that you mark, Binky has this, has that, doesn't have those things, they end up not qualifying. So what I will raise is the whole question of, you, I've read your stretch plan. There's a question of supporting the SMMEs. And this industry is highly unorganized. And there being some that are organized are being ripped off. So in your education, to me, it should not be a question of the Department of Economic Development. But where you are with your projects, you need to, in a question of redress, to educate this people that are in this industry, to say, pull together, who has these gifts, come together, this is how you organize yourself, this is the things that we need when you submit your proposal on the project, so that we have them tap on this funds, and not these funds being rolled over and rolled over, and at the end, the treasury say, we don't need these funds. Linked to that is the importance of data capture, who is in craft, so that you don't only promote the artists that are singing, or the very few. So the importance of ensuring that there is database, and how do we help you to get this database, because you may not get everybody when you call people in assignment or whatever. Others are marginalized by the very same, those that are called themselves organized. So once you reach out to those that are not known, which we know that are there in our constituencies. The other one is on the standardization of the geographical names. I know there's a conference tomorrow and Friday, and they've invited us, but because of the program of parliament, we may not be there. I think what is key there is the whole question that whilst each and every province has these boards, the communities in these provinces don't know that they are boards, and they don't know that what are the procedures to change these derogative names. Where are in Cape Town, as I'm sitting here, there is Kukuletu. Kukuletu, you have NY, which is Native Yat. Native Yat. They don't know that it's, you see, they don't feel like changing it because they don't know that there are procedures of changing that. You go to Tanzania, it's NU, Native Unit, 1 up to 16 or whatever it is. They don't know. So, what are the procedures to help these people? Where's their boards there? These boards are not marketing themselves. They're not reaching out to people. They're not giving people procedures. Even when the municipalities try to do this, for instance, there's the case at hand with Swane. They tried to change Pretoria to Swane. We were interdicted. The department was interdicted of procedures and all those things. So we need to do more on that one. The last one, which one? Let me raise the controversial one. The national symbols. I want to go to, you have committed to us on ensuring that you will strive towards putting a flag in government institutions. And we don't see those flags, even when you are at a church and, what's your other building? Church and Beatrix. I don't see the national flag there. So you have committed there in your threat plans and whatever. We need action there. But what I want to raise, is it allowed? For if we campaign, that I campaign with the flag, is it correct? Is it allowed that I campaign with the flag? And in that flag, we do wrong things, having it flag it high. And even where, put it here, then I put the flag here, and do wrong things, whilst I'm having this flag. Is it correct? Thank you.
It's beautiful for us.
When you rob people.
I don't remember.
I mean, if we went to Western Cape, then what would get?
I know that this thing that is going on between yourself and Honorable Moses. I'm going to request that this is a meeting,
yes,
and we are going to behave like honorable members.
Yes,
please. And I think it's for the last time. I can't every time in each and every meeting be calling both of you to order. It's uncalled for. And I will be leaders.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
To come between two boxes. It's dangerous to just duck in time because you can get the punch. Honorable Chairperson, I am very much interested in the students. There was already a question around the bursaries, but what I actually want to find out, the spreading of those bursaries to students over the different provinces, and especially also how many of them are in the Western Cape. That's a very short question, and the second one is also very short. The monitoring, how the department will monitor the National Film and Video Foundation, because in the 2010-11 financial year, they blamed their underspending or underperformance to the lack of financial resources. Now, we must just get this thing right so that we don't have the same repetition in this financial year from those entities. And the third question is replacing the arts and culture society program with performing arts. Now, I'm actually worried about the track how the department will track the performance, because there's another program now, actually. So we have to monitor how the performance will be, so that we can decide if it is necessary to go on with this program. And my last question, Honourable Chairperson, is in connection with I think this one I will leave. I must put a written question to the author. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Billers, but you are losing an opportunity that if you ask that question now, it will be in a position to make a follow-up. So, but it's up to you.
No,
it's okay. Before I give to the department, on your strategy plan, page 41, investing in culture funding model policy, reviewed structures. I just want to check, what were the challenges around your funding model? And currently, how is your funding? This other question is around young offenders, reintegration of the young offenders. I know when you go to the correctional services, it's a national competence. But if you go to these correctional centers, in most cases in the centers, you know, there are no activities, there are no programs. Whereas here you've got, you know, it's a good program, but one when it goes to the prisons, this is not actually happening. We find our juveniles doing nothing. In most cases, they will even say there are no programs. So one would just to check, how do you make sure that through this access program you deliver, because what is important is for these juveniles, when they get out of these centers, that they can be easily reintegrated into the society. The first question, it would be around the SMEs. Honorable Mube covered partly when he said they are, most of them, they are not organized. But what comes to one's mind, what is it that we're having to protect them from being exploited? Because they are really being exploited by these big companies. Language policy. DG. This thing of Western Cape, that Western Cape is the only province that it has language policy in place. This was reported by the former DG, Mr. Wakasha. The acting Mrs. Baduza also raised it. You raised it today. But in your strength plan, we don't see anything from the department to ensure that other provinces comply. What are your plans to ensure that not every year we are sitting with one problem, because really this is a reality. It needs to be dealt with. Lastly, around the issue of the community libraries, I must be honest, Deputy Minister, I'm not impressed, because even when you check, you know, like when the department is having unqualified reports, it's based on how much has been spent. But I think, you know, I'm just going to take it direct to you, Deputy Minister, as a politician, that I think it's now the time that we should be having service audit. I'm going to give a practical example again around the issue of the Northwest. If you check around the transfers, yes, the transfers have been done. You know, most of these transfers are just been done that, you know, at the end, when you report is that I had 62 million, I spent it. But you spend it how? Just by transferring it. We've got a case, Member Baduza,
you are aware of it, where 5 million was transferred to Swaziland municipality. But there's no library. But the books are clean because that money has been transferred. You know, there's no service audit. You've got Makwasi Hills, where money was transferred from the provincial department to a municipality. But the library is not there. And Deputy Minister, I think I'll be failing this community if I'm not going to raise this thing. That last week, Monday, a letter was hit by a truck from a township because after school he went for to do his assignment in a library. There's no library in that community. But according to the records, the very same township, the records indicate that the monies were transferred to this community for a community library, which is not there. The poor boy went to the library in town. On his way back, he was hit by a truck. This weekend we'll be burying him. You know, those are the practical issues which are happening on the ground, which are very painful. But we'll be sitting here having reports that in South Africa there's a library. When you go there, money has been transferred, but there's no library. So it goes back to the issue of monitoring. Are we just sitting in the offices, getting written reports, getting this rosy report, but when you go to the ground, it's the opposite. I think we really have to strengthen our monitoring mechanisms. I felt that I should raise it and it should be recorded because I feel that we have failed that community again.
Thanks, Ms. Kinche, and honorable members. The question of museums which are not reflected here, which are historical museums, is that the Act which regulates cultural institutions provides that institutions should apply to the department to be listed as cultural institutions. And once that has been done, obviously the department does a bit of its work. And once it is listed, then it becomes a listed institution that receives funding. The museums that we reflect in there are the listed museums. There are other cultural institutions that we are working with now towards listing, which are historic, but are not currently listed. So I would suggest that perhaps we need to look at those museums and see how we can help them towards getting their listing so that they can get their support as cultural institutions. The issue of festivals, I think perhaps this is not just an issue of festivals. It's about how funding flows into the sector, but also how that funding is used. Because I do believe that there is, if you look at most, whether you look at cultural or musical festivals, there's a lot of money that flows into the sector. It's government across the very different spheres, but also it's the private sector, and there are other, like the National Lottery. Part of what we need to do as a department is to see how that money is being used, so that we look at a holistic funding of the sector, and also find ways of regulating. Because I would completely agree with the chair that regardless of who funds different festivals, they cannot be used as ways of dividing society. I really would think that it cannot be right that you've got exclusive festivals for certain race groups or certain groups in society. That is against the spirit of social cohesion and nation building. The banners that which exclude Zulu as a language or proper banners, I had not seen that, and I will check on that and will ensure that we do correct that. It would be a very big omission from our side if we had done that. The issue of the broadcasting of religious programs that may undermine the rights of women. As a department, we do not have regulatory function over broadcasting. However, there is a broadcasting, what is it called? The Broadcasting Complaints Commission, which we can complain about programs that are sexually offensive or that undermine rights or that undermine national unity and so on and so forth. And I do think that this matter does need to be taken with the Broadcasting Complaints Commission. And certainly we will follow up on that as a department to ensure that the things that are promoted in the media are things that are in line with the Constitution. The issue of capturing of data, we do have some data in the department about artists. I don't think that our data is comprehensive because it is based on the information that we have access to. I'm sure there are many, many artists who are out there that we know absolutely nothing about. However, what we're trying to do is, that is why we're trying to establish the observatory. Because the observatory, part of what the observatory is supposed to do is to help us to get that data, not just on the numbers of artists and what they are doing, but also at what they are producing and the economics of what different artists are doing. But certainly we would appreciate it if honorable members would actually bring those to our attention, because it is important that we link artists with markets. That's a very big part of what we're going to be doing going into the future through the art bank, through the sourcing enterprise and so forth. Geographic names, I would agree. In fact, part of the workshop that we're having tomorrow is exactly addressing that. A lot of where we get caught out, and the legal advisor is here and she has been saying to me that a lot of the time we get caught up in the procedures, either because processes were not properly followed or there were a bit of shortcutting. But as I mentioned earlier on, that it's not just, for instance, the Act that regulates geographic names does not prescribe what is consultation. It says there's got to be consultation. However, consultation is prescribed by the Access to Administrative Justice Act. So it's really about how you bring all of these things together, which impacts on government, and making this information available to municipalities, to provinces, to the council, to the councils, as well as the national council, so that we are not caught up on issues of process. Perhaps we do need to look at public institutions and public buildings on whether the flag is there. I know that what we have been working on specifically has been the schools project. And to date, we have rolled out the Department of Education tells us that there are about 24,000 schools in South Africa. The first phase of the project rolled out 2,000 flags. Second phase, which is due for completion in August, is rolling out 3,000 flags. And we've got the third phase, which starts in August, which is going to roll out a further 5,000 flags. So we're trying to build, on this on an ongoing basis. However, part of what we're doing, Jay, is not just buying the flags, but also the appropriate usage of the flags. There's a booklet which the department has printed, which is about national symbols and actually how they should be used. There are certain ways in which the flag cannot be used. There are places in which the flag cannot be used. For instance, the flag cannot be used as a draping over a table or to hang in a podium or so on and so forth. But also the flag should be used in a manner which is appropriate for the national symbol, which I do think that there are certain instances where people cannot be using the flag and being disorderly or so on and so forth. But I think part of the work that we need to continue to do is to build national pride to the extent that private individuals not only use the flag but are ready to defend it. Because if somebody is abusing the flag, it's not a government issue alone. It's an issue of national pride. And that is where I think the popularization of national symbols becomes an important thing. I don't think that we'll ever have sufficient capacity to monitor and to police how the flag is being used. That is the duty of every South African chief. I'll ask Ms. Padusa to speak briefly about the issue of the funding models for investment in culture. There was a question about the students who are recipients of bursaries. We don't have that information here, but we can certainly have it. We can make that available. I know that what the department does, we don't pay bursaries to individuals. We pay bursaries to the institutions, the universities, which then give the bursaries to the students. We can draw the information from the universities and make it available to the committee. The NFVF underperforming because of underfunding. If you notice in our budgets, the breakdown of our budget, the NFVF is the one institution that is getting over the MTF the biggest increases. In fact, if you look at the slide that I showed on funding that is reinvested, NFVF this year gets about 37 million rand increase. That's an increase over their baseline. So they are getting a lot of money for them to do what they need to do. So I cannot say that it's sufficient, but certainly it is a substantial increase from where they come from. And I think that it would allow them to do a bit more than they have been able to do. The provincial language policies, I think, Chair, we have started engaging. In fact, most provinces tell us that they are in processes of developing the provincial language policies. Because of the court case there is this lawyer who took government to court over the fact that we have not done what the constitution says we should do, which is why part of the reason why we are trying to fast track the passing of the national languages bill. Provinces, are also being affected by that, and they inform us that they are going to be doing this. It's not reflected in our strategic plan. I do acknowledge that, but it's something that we need to do.
That they're going to do that. What you're saying is that they've been always saying that this is what they're going to do.
Perhaps it's something that we just need to
do. Yes, always saying that this is what they're going to
do. And finally, the service audits, the money that is transferred to municipalities. Jay, I would say here we need to do an audit, an ongoing audit of the extent to which that money is being used for things that this has been done. Personally, I do have difficulties with always transferring monies. In particularly to local government, because it's the sphere of government which has the least capacity and the biggest demand. And I have been saying to the department that where we can help municipalities, by reducing their load, we should try and do that. And I don't think that it's a question of whether it's this a municipal function or not. It's a question of trying to locate where the capacity is and trying to help out municipalities. We will follow up on these cases in others to see what has happened there. But I do think that we need, between ourselves and provinces, to do as much as we can to ensure that the money is used for what it is meant to be used for. Colleagues, I don't know if colleagues would like to add that.
Thank you, Deputy Chairperson and Honourable Members. Just to say that we will provide further details on bursaries, Honourable de Villiers, but we, at the moment, we have got language bursaries to students at Free State University as well as at Rhodes University. The information that we get from our colleagues in library and language services that those are the two universities to which we offer language bursaries to students. But if there's any other information, we will provide the honourable members. The challenges with the Investing in Culture funding. The project, as honourable members would know, was well-meaning in terms of creation of jobs, in terms of promotion of alleviating of poverty, as well as ensuring that the sector itself brings and ensures that people bring food on their table. Firstly, it focused on the craft sector within the broader cultural industries. So that was the first point that we are looking at. As the DG has alluded to earlier, we would like to ensure that the funding covers the broader aspects of the cultural industries and not just one specific sector. But also, the one major challenge is what Member Mnube has referred to, the issue of building capacity or business skills to the SMMEs. When people apply for funding, they would get some assistance in terms of developing those business plans. But then when the project shapes up and people then have to provide, you know, written reports or updates on how they're doing, then they find it very difficult to do that. And then until then we're not flexible. We become strict on those reports. But what we have done then is, especially now during the month of April, we went throughout the provinces to assist those that are already receiving funds for the Investing in Culture programs in terms of, and trying to simplify also our documents and our requirements, but taking them through what we would like them to, in terms of ensuring that they meet the requirements as far as the funding model is concerned. But what we've also done further to that is to look at internally in terms of this current funding strategy, especially with regards to the Investing in Culture. How can we review it? Firstly, to ensure that it covers the broad range of cultural industries, but secondly, to streamline it and make it accessible and user-friendly to our especially people in the small medium, it's called SMMEs. So we have then set up a task team internally to assist us to look at how we can revisit the strategy that we had set up before and the funding model itself, so that we get through the challenges. But also the last one, which the DG has alluded to, is this issue of monitoring these projects, which has been a challenge for us. We had appointed
coordinator, as honourable members would know, for each province. But that didn't prove to be effective because those people, some of them were found to be working from their offices, and a whole lot of range of things that are being dealt with in the case that has been that is ongoing, which the DG said would be finalised hopefully soon by the end of this week. But we then went to provinces and we visited all the provinces and requested that they assist us in the monitoring and evaluation of these projects, because we still believe that they are very good projects. They do provide jobs for people, but they also do ensure that people really do have something to eat before they go to bed. Thank you. I think those are the areas. But also on the issue of language policies, members would remember that we do have a national language committee, and then we have provincial language committees. They met recently in Pretoria. There was a meeting of all the forums to discuss these issues of the language policies. I must say that although not all provinces do have policies, but there has been some progress that has been made. Our colleagues are telling us that it's the Free State, the Northwest, and the Northern Cape that still are outstanding in terms of finalizing their language policies. So there has been some improvement. It's not just the Western Cape. Some other provinces have also moved on. So we, especially as DJ said, with this case that is pending. So I think colleagues are taking this very seriously now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gigi, and thank you, Chair. Honourable members, I think the issue around monitoring evaluation has been raised several times, and I think we've taken note of all the concerns that have been raised. And we are in the process of developing a comprehensive M&A strategy. And one of the things in which we agree with this with the House is around the verification of some of the activities or projects on the ground. I think that's one of the areas that we have to really focus on. And that is going to require foot soldiers, people who are actually going to go in the project site to verify if really something has happened on the ground. So that's an area that we are going to focus on. And also I think we need to rope in some of our colleagues from the audit sort of function or unit within the department to assist us with that. And so the partnership there already has to happen, and that's something that we're actually going to be looking into. Also, in terms of, I think it's also relating to monitoring evaluation, and this question was raised around students, bursaries, and basically how that is spread out, how in terms of allocation of those funds. And this also talks in terms of how do we develop tools that begin to request province to respond to those issues. And basically that tool is something that we're going to be looking into. We've toyed around the balanced scorecard approach in terms of reporting by provinces and also by the public institutions, but that is something that we're still going to have to develop. And basically it's going to respond to the honourable members' questions around the geographical spread of those allocations, the allocation of bursaries, how they're responding to the gender aspects in terms of redress also. So those are things that we are working on, and basically hopefully when we come back to this committee we'll have something positive to respond on. Thank you.
Thank you. Members?
Just a follow-up.
Just a follow-up. It's only you now.
Yes. Just one
thing. I just want to find out if the bursaries are related or connected to the NIS funds. That's all, right? To the NIS funds, yeah. National Student Aid Funds.
Chair, no, these are bursaries that come directly from the budget of the department.
Thank you, TG. Let me just check if the minister just...
Thanks, Chair. Just a few comments. Firstly, just to say to Honourable Mnube that the issue which has raised about this Soweto TV, just as one of the areas that I think it highlights, I don't know whether there is a gap in terms of some of our legislation or the implementation, because this matter, it's been also in some of the print media. And some newspapers have written about the kind of abhorrent things happening on that TV. Now, I don't know whether the Broadcasting Complaints Commission can only react if an individual, somebody, but we will follow that up, you know, through our communications department, and I think we may need to follow up with her in terms of just, because we may need to quote some specific episodes of, you know, if we can say and make some reference, but I'm quite aware of it, and I think we'll work together to plug that hole. The last comment really is just on the matter which the chair has raised about, I mean, we often hear from different commentators in the public media about the way, the manner in which public funds get ripped off in terms of at various levels of government, where on paper certain projects are reported as having been implemented, but in practice nothing has happened and the communities have been robbed of those projects. I would want to assure members that, you know, while the systems of more coordinated monitoring and evaluation program is being put together, we would appreciate information like the chair has given to us, if other members are aware of some of the things which you are reporting, or if they pick up in their constituency work, we will immediately follow up, and I'm sure the examples which the chair has given, we will not wait for, you know, other systems, but we'll immediately follow up and make sure that those matters are attended, and if there is some criminality which has happened, that those responsible are brought to book. Thanks very much to the chair and the members.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honourable members, I see everybody now still looking. On this note, let me just say thank you, and Deputy Minister, we appreciate, because you are always available to appear before this committee. On that note, our meeting stands adjourned. Honourable members, the meeting is adjourned, but I just want to make one request. Do all members have this copy of the negotiating mandate?
Yes.
It's very important for members to go through this, because the amendment in the education, basic education amendment thing. So it would be very important for members to read and familiarize themselves with the document, because we are going to have two meetings, the one of the 15th and the one where we'll be sitting at the select committee, just to work through that thing. Thank you.
This is what I was trying to say. Don't bring it back at court or in court. You hear what I'm saying? So don't come and try and make a political statement. So if you understand, please, that's not enough.
No, they sent it.
That is what will happen.
Yes.
That's called your
and then the province